Tailgate Gang Podcast, episode 112. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I fully expected barbershop music after that picture you put up on the blog.
Yeah. And Graham Thickens.
That tune's got me jumping around, baby.
And Phil, I got ants in my pants, Wilson.
I personally think that the grabbing that picture of us in our weekend hobby, it was kind of interesting.
There we go. So how you guys doing? We missed last week, but we're back in full force and got quite a show lined up for today.
Lots of discussion.
Lots of stuff to talk about. The first one is, in fact, we started off right before we started recording talking a little bit about Graham's new 13-inch air and mine that's on a truck on its way as we speak. And then there's new MacBooks that just came out using a new technology called Thunderbolt.
The only thing is I found out there's no drives available yet.
No drives, so, yep.
And but there were people in the store buying those new MacBook Pros yesterday, for
sure.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a line yesterday, Graham?
No, well, I didn't go till like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but it's always busy. But the people were hovering around the new MacBook Pros, and I saw more than one being rung up. So it's a nice machine. But, the Thunderbolt piece of it, it's going to be a while before people are going to have stuff, peripherals, to take advantage of that. But a while might only be a few weeks. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, for those that don't know, the advantages to Thunderbolt is a speedy 10 gigabits per second as a transfer. But more importantly, one port will drive your monitor. You'll be able to hook up external hard drives. You'll be able to daisy chain up to 6 different devices. And I got to tell you, anybody that does video editing is probably doing backflips over this technology. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. It's way faster than FireWire, I guess.
Oh, significantly. Well,
it's about 2 times faster than USB and 3 times faster than FireWire, isn't it?
I think it's even more than that. No.
So what makes it better than SCSI, Steve?
Oh, good old SCSI. For those that don't know, the small computer systems interface, SCSI, was this big honking interface that, hard drives and jazz drives and zip drives and all these things that, frankly, you can't buy anymore, used to connect. And it was a black art, wasn't it, Tim?
We were excited about it, though, back in the day.
That's true. That's real true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of funny. But, okay, so I have a question for Graham here. Mm-hmm. So take me through the psychology of getting the fully loaded 13-inch Air versus the fully loaded 13-inch MacBook Pro.
I'm glad you asked because
I'm not sure I am, but
I've
go ahead.
Got
because
how
if
much
it were
time?
Me, if it were if it were me, if it were me, and I'm just looking at both of the specs, and I'm looking at this, I'm going to get the 13-inch MacBook Pro. So tell me why you bought the Air.
Okay, well, the overriding thing is weight and the speed, the fast on and the speed of the SSD drive. It's soldered right onto the motherboard. So key point, I was considering the MacBook Pro 13-inch with 256 gig SSD. And the guy said, yeah, but that SSD isn't as fast as the SSD on the MacBook Air. And, everybody I talked to about the MacBook Air said, oh, it's my favorite machine ever. It's so fast and it's so light. And I mean, the weight difference in the MacBook Air is 1.9 pounds versus 4.5 on the 13-inch MacBook Pro. And I'm hauling around a black MacBook that's 5 pounds now. And the new MacBook Pro feels about the same. And it's like after you've picked up and seeing how light the Air is, I mean, it's like, that made my decision. And I don't need the doggone super drive built into the MacBook Pro, I can use my old MacBook for the drive, if I need to load software. And I don't really watch DVDs on my laptop. So, the battery life is another thing. It's about the same. The guy told me in the story, he said, we're saying both are 7 hours now. But he said, actually, you're probably going to get more on the MacBook Pro because it's physically a bigger, heavier battery, you know, with more volume. So he said, we were saying 10 hours at one time, but we didn't want to overstate. So he said, now we're saying 7 hours on either one. But, you know, it, yeah, the Pro might get a little bit more, but hey, seven, are you kidding me on the MacBook Air? That, you know, I'm used to like three if I'm lucky now.
Yeah.
So
just from a video editing and computing standpoint, a 2.7 i7 is a lot faster than a 1.8 dual core, a core 2 duo.
Now, wait a minute. 1.8, the MacBook Air I'm getting is 2.13 gigahertz process.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You got the
different chip version.
And I don't need a lot of heavy processing stuff. You know, I mean, I don't do Photoshop. I don't do big spreadsheets.
Well, see, that's what I looked at, Graham, when you were looking at this is the i7, to your point, Tim, would be awesome if you were using this as a primary machine, maybe hooked to a big monitor, and you were doing a lot of video editing and a lot of real heavy processor stuff. But Graham, you're writing a lot and you're blogging and you're, you know, doing things like that, but you're on the road quite a bit. And, yep. And, cause I was really torn too, cause for what I paid for this 11-inch MacBook Air, I could have easily gotten the new, 13.3 MacBook Pro with this Thunderbolt technology and so forth for roughly the same money, just a little bit more, maybe another $150. And I stopped and said, man, should I do that? No, because I've got this big honking Mac Pro with, you know, all tricked out. And so for video editing or Photoshop stuff or whatever, I've got all this horsepower. And what I really need is just something tiny that I can make sure I have with me all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and when you're hauling your iPad and your Bluetooth keyboard and all kinds of other stuff, your digital camera, and traveling light really, really matters, you know. So I'm going to be loving the MacBook Air.
So it looks like next week we've got another Apple event. So do we think it's going to be the next iPad?
Yes.
That's what everybody's saying.
Well, what about these weird rumors about the iPhone Nano?
No, I think that's just a weird rumor.
Really?
I think it's just a weird rumor.
You don't think Apple's going down market in the mobile phone business?
Why? Who's down market?
Well,
they've got to do something because, Android is gaining market share so quickly. And it's Android goes to everywhere from free up to $250 on a contract. Mm-hmm. And to be there at $200, $300, you know, I know that you can buy a 3GS for $50 now on AT&T.
Yep, 49.
So maybe that's their strategy. Actually, maybe they take the 3GS and they change the radio out and they just make it unlocked and they charge $300 for it. And you can use it on T-Mobile, you can use it on AT&T, whatever you want. If they did that, I think they just blow the whole market up.
That's pretty smart, actually. Yeah.
So that may be the Nano, and then the iPhone 5, maybe it gets a bigger screen.
You know? Well, that's what they're saying. A 4-inch. Yeah. Yep.
So
that's the rumor.
So the iPad 2 thing, interesting fact that I thought was kind of amazing was All Things D had an article about in Q3, 4.5 million tablets were sold. 4.3 million of them were iPads. but what's going to be interesting is the next wave, you know, is this going to be, you know, 15 million sold in the year or 20 million and half of them were iPads, you know, which is still an amazing number. But, you know, how many Zooms will there be and how many, you know, other honeycomb Android tablets will there be sold?
I don't think it's going to be that much. Because the market is so fragmented and they're too expensive. So for me, an Android tablet, and I love Android. So, I would probably be a good candidate to buy one, but for me, it has to be at least $100 cheaper than the iPad because of the apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And none of them are there. I mean, the Zoom is like $800. And even if you go on contract which no one wants to buy another data contract for what, $35 or whatever it is a month. I think it comes down to 500. So it's like, it's not a good economic proposition.
Yep.
So until they get to $300 or less, then I think Android tablets are going to have a real tough road to hoe. And then we've got the, you know, the Palm, or I guess now HP tablet coming out in the summer. And
the WebOS.
HP is a huge marketing organization. They've got, you know, the supply, this whatever their whole, you know, dealer lineup is formidable. So if anyone could take on Apple, it's HP. And from what I see, that tablet looks pretty interesting.
Did you see Walt Mossberg's review of the Zoom? Motorola's Zoom?
It was lukewarm, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he's saying it's the first serious competition, but price is certainly an issue there. And I'll put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
But he breaks it down pretty doggone well, you know. Honeycomb's promising, but it'll give the iPad its stiffest competition, but price will be an obstacle, and Apple isn't standing still.
Yeah,
I'm hoping to see Walt this weekend at demo, by the way. And I always ask him, what are you working on? And he'll never tell me.
Yeah, because he knows you'll blog about it.
Right.
He never lets out what he's reviewing, you know.
He says in his mind, he says, oh, there's blabbermouth thickens.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, I try, but he never says, you know. And I'll put the link into that.
Well, Tim, did you put the link in here in the show notes about the Android market adding ebooks, movies, and music?
I did. They haven't added music or movies yet, but they've just added books.
Okay.
So it's clear that Google's been working on this music service for over a year now. So they're going to do music at some point. And if they do that, they might as well do movies and TV shows, all that stuff.
Wow.
So the Android market is starting to become something that looks almost exactly the same as iTunes at this point.
Which I don't know if it is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing.
All the same price. So it's just a matter of, will people make that decision to go iOS based upon the content available? Or will they say, hey, I can get the same thing on Android, so I'll just go that way?
So with this glut of tablets, with this, you know, continued onslaught of mobile devices, you know, we always wait for things to kind of shake out as far as what will be, you know, the uptake by consumers, you know, what ones will rise to the top and which will sort of settle on the bottom and go away eventually. Do you see that ever happening with the rate that we see the new smartphones coming out, and with the rate that we're seeing these tablets come out? Will there ever be that opportunity for the settling out in the market?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I think
it's going to always be fragmented and always be as turbulent as we've seen. So everyone's trying to, you know, get new products out on crazy schedules now. It used to be, you know, every year we'd have a new, you know, flagship smartphone. And now it seems like it's every 2 months, you know.
Yeah.
So you buy something like the phone you've got, Phil. You've got the Evo 4G. And that was a flagship for what, a month and a half?
Well, I think, you know, I got to know. I still feel like, based on marketing, though, Tim, I think the Evo 4G is still the flagship for Sprint.
Okay.
I mean, I it seems like that's the thing they hang their hat on, is still the 4G. They're getting a lot of new phones every day, obviously, but I seem to see a lot of marketing on the 4G. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, speaking of this pace about, you know, putting things out, you know, the new Wired magazine came in the other day, and right here on the cover, 1 million workers, 90 million iPhones, 17 suicides. It's a cover story about the people in China that make all of our gadgets and the rate of suicide within their factories. It's very interesting. I haven't had a chance to read the whole article yet, but...
Well, that story's been out for a while, the Foxconn. And for those who don't know, Foxconn, Foxconn, is the company that makes a tremendous number of gadgets for a variety of companies. And, you know, there's been all kinds of analysts who have looked at it, who have, you know, psychology degrees or are psychiatrists that have said that, you know, suicide is infectious. And if somebody does it, then somebody else does it and so on. But 17 was an atypical number. But the point is that, you know, at the end of the day, these people are just cranking stuff out. Yeah. And it's the new sweatshop, you know, even though the company's here, because there is so much awareness and because we are all so connected, you know, we've seen what's happened in the Middle East with the availability of Twitter and Facebook and people being able to get their messages out and getting support and, you know, solidarity from other countries and people around the world. There's almost instant awareness of things going on in other countries. And that puts pressure on the companies that are having their stuff made over there. And this Foxconn thing, you know, Apple ended up, because Apple got nailed, people were really questioning this. Apple actually sent representatives over there to really figure out what the heck was going on and if the conditions were correct, and they needed to really dig into it. But, you know, I mean, how great is that to have that kind of pressure brought to bear on any company?
Well, but the scale of that factory is so huge that, you know, if you, it's like it's its own city, you know, so there's a lot of people that kill themselves here in the Twin Cities or in New York or wherever, you know what I mean? That you don't see on the front cover of the mag of the newspapers, unfortunately, but, you know, whenever you get a lot of people together, things like this are going to happen. So I'm not sure if it's because we're addicted to cheap gadgets or not, but it might be.
Well, I think it's a matter of you know, the pace by which they have to be grounded and the repetitive nature of the work, the conditions of, you know, working elbow to elbow doing that work. There's something to be said by, yes, there's more people, so there's a higher incidence of suicide. But, you know, I also think that that's a really nice way of relieving our guilt by saying that.
Well, you know, though, there was a, I was on the treadmill last night. There was a program on ABC about all of the trinkets that are available for sale in the Smithsonian gift shop and other gift shops. And this ABC reporter was going around and picking things up, you know, like here's a bust of George Washington, and on the bottom it says made in China, and then he picks up another thing and it's made in China, and they went out and purchased about 50 items at all these different gift shops, and they're all made in China. And yet nobody talks about the companies that are, you know, making our trinkets and our tchotchkes as sweatshops. But can you imagine? Or, and now I have to go find this guy, but there was a guy that spoke at the Web 2.0 summit 2 years ago or 3 years ago about this company in Sichuan province in China that was totally disrupting motorcycle manufacturing in Asia Pacific and potentially maybe in the US eventually, because they were using cell phones to text orders to villages who would make one specific part. So when they got the orders in, they'd send out a text message, we need 200 of these, or we need 500 or whatever. And the village would come together, they would make all the parts to a very exacting specification, and then they would ship those parts, and they'd all collide at the right time. But they were doing all their supply chain management with mobile phones. And nobody really talks about that. And yet it's a good thing for these villages because they're getting this money to come in that they never had before. I don't know. I think it's easy to go after big targets, and I think that's what the Foxconn story was.
Well, and plus, it was news months ago, so why is Wired, you know, throwing it out on their cover now? I don't get that. But, you know.
Chris Anderson's trying to change the world.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Well, it must have been a slow news month or something. Well, not that it's a news publication, it isn't. But
well, I'm sorry, Apple guys. I wasn't aware this was a story months ago.
Oh yeah, it was.
Oh okay, yeah, Phil. People were throwing themselves off buildings months ago. Jeez.
Well, yeah, and they were before the story broke too. Like Tim said, it happens in any big city. But this was making news back last summer. You know, Yeah. So yeah. I don't get why they're rehashing it now. But they have to fill a lot of pages, you know.
Well, okay, so
that's kind of a jaded viewpoint of publications, don't you think?
I love Wired, but I mean,
people could say the same thing about all of us. Ah, you got to fill another 40 minutes of a podcast. Ah, you got to do another
post. You know, Wired is great, but I guess I wouldn't rush right out to buy the issue for that story. But anyway.
So we've been out off the air for a couple of weeks. What's been going on around town?
Events and stuff?
Yeah. Well, that nonprofit technology and communications conference occurred, and didn't go to that. But anybody go to the Mojo Minnesota event?
Been too busy.
Yeah, I know.
It was about tech transfer.
Right.
Does that mean that new startup that we were talking about was speaking at that cast outfit or
I don't know.
Might have been what it was about.
Yeah. Yeah. See how knowledgeable we are? No, but it was really about
we get all these emails about these events, and I mean if we ever went to half of them, we'd never get anything done. You know,
we
between the four of us we try to capture most of them, but it ain't easy.
Yeah, the objective for this was organizations that are using organizations and institutions that are delivering their intellectual property as potential licensable technology. So the U of M, for example, Mayo, and others. That was really so. CAST was part of this as well. So. Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't go either. But I think it was last night, wasn't it? The WordPress meeting, Tim, did you go to that?
Yeah, I did. There was 15, 20 people out for that. And we worked on the new MSP WordPress website, which is now open for anyone that's interested to kind of join the group. You can sign up. It's a BuddyPress site. We still have a lot more work to do on it, but it's functional now. So it's at MS.
It's good to see that finally the WordPress user has a WordPress blog. That's great.
It's at mspwordpress.com. And we're still going to use the Google group for the listserv capability because it's super easy. And we're also going to use the Google calendar for the events because so many people use Google these days for the calendar. It just doesn't make sense to put in a WordPress centric calendar. So we're going to still use that. So we just need to integrate that into the site. But we also met the first time with a little over half of the full court WordPress team for the overnight website challenge. And we sort of got a little organized for that. So that was at the end. So it was a late night.
So you're deciding on deodorant and chewing gum, things like that.
I don't know about that, but no, we talked about
pens.
What we learned last year and what we're going to do different. And we have high hopes that we won't be hacking the site at 6 a.m. while the judges are walking around.
So. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
anyway, but we'll see what happens.
I'd like to segue into a conversation about something that you've talked about, Phil, at length. Yeah. And I know that we all have. Relative to mobile and so on, and that's the always on, always connected culture. That all of us, not all of us, clearly, but a good percentage and a growing percentage of people are walking around with smartphones or obviously laptops to get connected to Wi-Fi and so on. But more and more, we're all connected to the net. And in fact, Google has come out and said that most purchases, in fact, half of transactions will be mobile by 2015. And then Mary Meeker, who was with Morgan Stanley when they came out, and Deloitte, the consulting organization, has done this as well, talking about by 2015, mobile is going to surpass desktop. 2015, 5 years, that it'll be bigger than the desktop. So most
what do
of,
they
most
consider
of us
mobile, though? Is it, it's because mobile to me is not just phones. It's really kind of
phones,
any mobile
tablets,
device.
And it's laptops.
Tablets. Oh, yeah.
They consider
laptops are mobile.
Yeah, they consider laptops to be mobile.
Okay.
But I also, and I sent this to you, Phil, by email this morning.
Yeah.
But Michael Robertson, the guy that, you know, he's the controversial serial entrepreneur that did MP3.com or MP3 tunes, right, or something like that, when it was still not okay to put digital music up. He also did Gizmo 5, which he sold to Google, which has now become Google Voice. And he has a new technology, DAR.fm, and I'll put this in the show notes, but it's basically taking live radio and putting it online so you can stream it. Well, I don't know about you guys, but just about everybody I know that has any kind of a smartphone is loading the Pandora app and streaming through Pandora. Or I even know people that go in with their iPhones with iTunes, and instead of downloading podcasts, they literally just push play and they start to stream the podcasts right through iTunes. And so this whole mobile thing is accelerating so fast, and there's so many things like this out there. What does this really mean? What does it mean for entertainment? What does it mean for socializing with all the check-in apps and ability to tweet everywhere? And, you know, what does it mean for education? What does it mean for work when place doesn't matter anymore? Are we all going to work 24/7 or, you know, be on or available? Phil, what do you think it means?
Well, I think there's a lot of different things. And when we talked about DAR this morning, you know, you and I kind of talked via email. First and foremost, the whole concept of sort of this DVR for radio is wonderful for it's just one more step in making it easier to listen when and where you want. The downside is that the broadcaster or the producer, it takes away the ability to monetize that particular piece of content, which is kind of scary, because if you can't afford to pay somebody to create the content because you can't generate revenue from the content, then the content will go down and you will have a lot of people just basically doing it because they love to do it. Kind of like what we do here, you know?
Yeah, baby.
And I don't know. I worry about the impact it has on revenue and the ability to, just in commerce in general and the economy. So there's that thing. But as far as, it's vital to any content provider to be available wherever and whenever their listeners, viewers, friends, followers, whatever are. I mean, you've got to be there. So I think it's vital that we keep creating these new sources of content.
Well, I'm looking at this DAR thing, and it's sort of a mashup between MP3 tunes on the back end, where you actually listen to the content, and an audio DVR. So if I want to listen to say the Dennis Miller show, and I want to listen to it at night, this would allow me to record it, and then through MP3 tunes, I can play it back on my phone or on my Roku box or whatever supports MP3 tunes, which is sort of a digital locker for your MP3 files. So it's an interesting idea, and it broadens the audience. So you're getting new listeners you wouldn't have before.
Yeah.
True. I don't know. I don't know necessarily if you're getting new listeners that you haven't had before, because again, you've got to be able to cut through the millions and millions of new content that is available to you now. So you're not necessarily going to get more listeners, because you're really one more face in this massive crowd in the cloud. So it's kind of a difficult row to hoe, but at the same time, I'm not sure yet. Yes, it's one step that's a little easier. I'm not sure I see the difference between that and a podcast, and shifting your podcast.
It's more immediate. So yeah,
it's more immediate. Yeah, supposedly. So,
well, it's recording off of the live stream. So
sure,
once it's done,
but you're going to shift it. but you're going to shift it anyway. So it's not, you know, the, you know, a podcast can be available, you know, within minutes after its production. So,
well, let's jump up to a higher level though, on the whole always on, always connected thing, because it's been interesting. I may have told this story before, but I'm driving with my son in the car, and he says to me, he goes, you know, Dad, what countries are around the Baltic Sea? I said, well, you know what? Why don't you look it up? You've got your phone. And he, oh yeah. And so he does a quick Google search, which pulls up Wikipedia, which he's not supposed to use, but at least it would have a picture that he could see what the countries were. And within, I'd say, 45 seconds, he's telling me what the countries are around the Baltic. Now, that I keep thinking about the fact that of all the things that we had to cram into our brains, because we just had to have the information in our brains so we could set context on stuff and so forth. But what happens when you essentially have the world's information at your fingertips and you don't have to? What happens when you can literally be anywhere and you have everything you need to do your work? You know, to talk to people, to email, to go back and forth. And I would argue that we can do that now. I'm trying to continually set myself up like that. So that's work, and that's some aspects of education. And now the socializing thing, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to augment what we do in the real world in meat space instead of cyberspace. But what does that stuff really mean? I mean, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? I know, Phil, you have great opinions on this.
Nah, I got nothing to say.
I think it could go. It goes either way, and it's great for those of us that are, you know, doing what we like to do and live where we like to live. Where, you know, before I would have to live in the Napa Valley or Sonoma or someplace to do the kind of work that I do, but now I don't really have to do that. So yeah. You know, I can live here and still have clients out in California.
Well, I think that
all of this technology, this allows us more freedom that way.
Well, I think the question is sometimes maybe at a more cerebral standpoint, guys, is from if you have this available at your fingertips and you don't necessarily have to learn it, what's happening in your brain now? I mean, are you using that gray matter wisely now? Are you not necessarily learning anything because you have access to everything? So, I mean, oh, that's a kind of a very, you know, gazillion foot view, but.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd argue that in the same way that we walk into Cub Foods and buy shrink wrapped meat, I would argue that none of us would know how to walk out and slaughter a cow and cut it up properly and not poison the meat and how
it's
to
not true.
Protect
just
it.
Google
and,
it.
Yeah, right. Just Google it. Yeah.
Hey, I worked at the hormone plant, you know, and I was in community college, oh, baby.
All right. That was a bad analogy. I'm sorry.
bad analogy.
You guys.
Well, okay. So that points to, you know, if you bring up the grocery store concept, Steve, yeah, that kind of points to this. Okay. Now we've got this excess going, because clearly you walk into a grocery store, it's a poster child for excess is in any American grocery store. How much of it is really needed? How much of it is vital, and how much of it's going to be around 5 years from now? So where does the quality of content go? If you get access to so much content, how much of it is good and how much of it is bad?
Well, but, you know, I mean, there's unintended consequences for everything. I mean, the unintended consequence for us putting our bodies into cars and having everything so easy now and so on, and the cost of a calorie being so little, the downside is we're fat. You know,
yourself there, Spud.
Okay. Hey, well, you're,
I dropped 13 pounds, baby.
All right.
Yeah. It's that treadmill.
When did you do that?
It's that treadmill death since December.
Hey, look, I live in the biggest glass house, so it's not like I was accusing you guys of being fat, but anyway, the point though is that, you know, it's an unintended consequence, but we don't have to spend our time farming or raising cattle or chickens or, you know, any of that stuff. You know, yeah, people on farms still today, the 20% that live in rural areas, do a lot of that, do a lot of their own gardening and so on and so forth. But the point is that we've leapt up to a higher level. And one of the things that I'm looking at with all of this onrush to social stuff, to work stuff, to education stuff, and, you know, what does it really mean? Are we going to jump up to a much higher level? Because now there's so much other stuff that, you know, before we had to wait till the newspaper came out or wait till the magazine came out and be informed before we could go off and do something. Or we'd have to spend a lot of time at the library to do research that we can now, you know, compress that time. You know, and in my view, that's what's really accelerating all this change, is it's compressing the cycle time that it takes to do just about everything. And, well, and I'm not necessarily sure that's a good thing.
Well, I think this is the same kind of transformation that our grandparents made, where they grew up in a rural society for the most part, or, you know, a industrial revolution society where horses were still on the streets and, you know, airplanes hadn't really been perfected and all of this stuff. So the car and airplanes dramatically changed and they had to adjust to it. And our parents grew up in an age when, you know, there was no television, unless you lived in New York. Right. So it's,
yeah,
that's also a huge, huge deal. So it's the same kind of massive, adjustment to new technologies that they did 100 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So it's just our chance to try to cope and to try to make the best of it. And there's lots of opportunities.
I have to say, though, that I'm still really pissed off about one thing. Where the hell is my flying car and Rosie the Robot? I used to watch the Jetsons and I was waiting. And it's like, where is it?
It'll come. Yeah.
I know one of the things that Graham wanted to talk about was mobile commerce.
And, well, yeah, when we were, that's headed, yeah, so. Well, when we were touching on, you know, what does it do when, you know, what happens when everybody's got mobile devices? And I read a statistic that by 2014 there will be 1 billion smartphone users, and somebody mentioned, I think Phil, the topic of commerce, and, you know, it's still not there. I mean, I heard an interesting insight this last week from my friend Rob Weber, and you know, there really isn't that much happening. I mean, he asked me, you know, when was the last time you bought something on your mobile phone on Amazon? And, you know, that's true. I don't, but where the whole thing is going as far as where money is being made in mobile commerce right now, anyway, is all this virtual goods stuff and the gaming and the, you know, Facebook credits and all this stuff. And it you know, there's a lot still yet to come in the whole mobile commerce space. And also, I can't mention mobile commerce without bringing up our local friends Alvenda with Facebook commerce technology, and they changed their names. Steve, I was telling you that earlier in the week.
Yeah,
yeah, they're now Eighth Bridge, the number 8. So we share the number 8 with them. They are
A8thBridge.com. Yep,
and they explain the reasoning behind the new name, but I think it was a possible trademark infringement thing that they don't mention. But anyway, they have a fresh new name, and they're out kicking butt and taking names in the Facebook commerce space, from everything I hear.
Well, we're going to have Jamie Thingelstead, who's their chief technology officer, at some point in the next few weeks. And we'll dig into that more, because that's really fascinating. But, you know, what was interesting to me yesterday is when I met with a client, she asked me if she could give me a credit card on the spot to be able to pay the 50% of the fee up front. And I looked at her and said, no. And I realized it's because I don't have
Square?
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't have a QuickBooks app, for example, on my iPhone. And and right then, as I thought,
well, just get Square.
I should
get a Square account. It's free.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to do
I got
that.
Two of them. I haven't used it yet, but the little plug in to your headphone jack.
Yeah, but the Square app, though, you don't need to swipe the card. You can just put the number in.
Yeah, you can do either, but you're charged less if you swipe it. If you have to key it in, they take a little bigger piece.
Oh, really?
But didn't they just do a radical move to lower their price because somebody came out with a competitive? Who was that? Well, it's quick. It's Intuit, isn't it?
I don't know.
Didn't they come out with a competitive pay?
I believe they did. Yeah, you're right.
Paying system. And Square didn't waste any time. They lowered their price, and we're starting to see the battle of the payment systems on the mobile phone here.
Yeah, but how great is it, though? I mean, imagine you have an event. Imagine you, Phil, on this upcoming mobile march, which we should talk about in a second here, being able to sit at the desk and swipe cards for people to pay their entry fee. Mm-hmm. The potential.
Yeah, I sometimes
dramatic.
Wonder about if this is me, because I'm almost feeling like I've started this whole Andy Rooney thing by saying I sometimes wonder.
I got an eyebrow brush for you. So.
I think that if you get below the age of 30, 25. You know, as far as swiping mobile, you know, doing a credit card mobily, not a problem. I think that you have security concern issues with anybody over the age of 30 so far. As far as, geez, do I want to be able to, you know, do I want to just, you know, put my credit card number into my, right, you know, this fancy dancy mobile phone thingy? You know, I think that there's some security that has to come over. Now, but as you look at the millennials and the new millennials, you see that. Yeah, this is that sort of privacy thing is not a concern at all.
Yep.
Because they understand the technology a little more. They know no other technology. So.
Yeah, I think you're right, Phil. It's less of an issue the younger you get. Well, it was really interesting because this is we had somebody buy one of our trend albums and download it and then wanted to get it on the iPad. And so I ended up talking to her, and that sparked me to put together a page on how to read trend albums on the iPad on our website. But what was interesting about that was that she was really agitated that she couldn't actually buy it on the iPad and download it right to the iPad, that she had to buy it on her computer and then move it over. And she said, you know, as a matter of fact, I would like to do 100% of everything I do with your company on the iPad. And not that you can't just pull up the site and buy right from the site, but it's not as touch friendly as it could be. And so now we're looking into how do we change that? You know, how do we make the buttons bigger, for example, or make them more obvious and so on? Because she wants to be able to buy online, and contrast that to somebody who's also buys digitally, but does it on her laptop. And is 50, 51, I think she is, and has no interest. She says, oh, no, I never buy anything from a coffee shop, you know, et cetera, even if it's a secure socket layer connection. And so I think it is age-related or demographic-related.
For sure it is.
The younger you get, the less concerned people will be about doing mobile transactions. So are you guys going to cover any of that? Can you talk for a second, Phil, at the about the mobile march?
About that sort of thing? I'm sure it'll
well,
be
not
part
about
of
pay,
a
payments specifically, but about will there be anything on e-commerce at Mobile March?
Well, I think it's e-commerce is part of everything that we talk about, especially on the marketing and business side tracks. So there's going to be a mention of it. As it pertains to 2D codes, there'll be mentions of it as it pertains to what we do as far as tablets. You're going to see a lot of that at Mobile March. I don't know if we specifically have an e-commerce track that's set up. So.
Yeah, but you guys are going to talk about QR codes.
QR
coupons,
codes
things like
part
that,
of
right?
the issue, tablets, big yep. part of the issue yep. About the track, you know, the new technology. And then using that in real world situations, everything from campaign trails to marketing. We have secured our keynote speaker, a gentleman by the name of Jack Philbin from Vibes Marketing, also a co-chair at Mobile Marketing Association, will be our keynote speaker, and he'll be talking a lot about trends and branding and what's actually being used in the mobile space. So we're looking forward to getting some more information about
Where's he from, Phil?
He's from Chicago.
Oh, cool. And, hey, that big tech town. Yeah.
So,
hey, I was going to ask you on QR codes. I heard of a new startup. It's kind of a stealth startup here locally called Itison. Have you run into them yet?
I wonder if they're not.
We should get them to Mobile March because they're doing things with QR codes that sound kind of interesting. And it's two ladies. They are going to be on a panel at South by Southwest. So hopefully that won't conflict with Mobile March. I don't think it does. You're after South by Southwest, right?
Yep. But much better and far cooler than South by Southwest.
and saves a lot of money to go to Mobile March instead of South by Southwest. My gosh, it's an expensive trip to do that down there.
Yeah. If you guys had the chance to go to South by Southwest, would you do it?
Yeah, I would. I'm kind of ambivalent. You know, it's the party crowd, you know. I don't know if I'd survive it.
I'd go
but then
just
I don't
for the
know
music.
If I'd come back feeling that I, you know, did anything except eat a bunch of great barbecue and drink a bunch of beer, you know.
I'd go down just for the music.
Yeah, well, there you
That's
go.
That's what I loved about
Austin
when I was
is a great great music.
When I was working for Vignette,
actually the South by Southwest Music Festival is the week after South by Southwest Interactive. So you'd be there for 2 weeks, brother.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Yeah, $5,000 instead of just $2,000. they have a lot of good music.
If I had your money, that'd be no problem.
Listen, just to hop back to Mobile March real quick, we also have Mobile 3D, and we'll be releasing the lineup of those demos. In fact, the lineup is available on our website at mobilemarchtc.com. So if you want to take a look at the lineup for the March 18th event at COCO, you can take a look at that as well. So all local developers and they'll be demoing their applications, and we'll enjoy a little dinner and drinks as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be a fun event. Then a few days after that, on Wednesday, is Cloud Camp MSP. And I got to tell you that it is the changes since the last Cloud Camp last year are absolutely amazing in terms of how far things have gone in just a year, from everything from buying storage to the number of organizations that are leaping into the cloud space from an infrastructure standpoint, but also from an applications standpoint. It was something as simple as signing up for Google Apps and going into the Google App Marketplace. Just do that sometime. Just go to the, I'll put a link in the show notes to the Google App Marketplace. Take a peek at all of the companies that have essentially Googleized their value proposition, so you have single sign-on if you have Google Apps for your domain. And I'm stunned, frankly, when I see how many organizations have made themselves available in that way. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, all the stuff that Amazon is doing and everything else, and local companies here, and how busy our local storage and computing host has accelerated, especially in Eden Prairie here with their big data center. So that's pretty cool. Tier three data center. And then the next night, Tim, is?
It's the next WordPress meeting, right?
It's the next WordPress meeting.
Nerdery.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And then that Saturday.
At the Nerdery, yeah. So it's it's on the 24th. Yeah.
And then 2 days later is
and then the Saturday. Yeah, I'm going to be out of town though. I've got a trip to California that week, but I'm coming back on that Friday. So I'll miss the next WordPress meeting. But we'll be obviously there on Saturday the 26th for the overnight website challenge.
Yep.
That should be That should be a good time again, or a challenging time.
And then, Graham, when are you going to to demo?
I'm leaving at 6 a.m. Sunday morning, and I'm getting into the Palm Springs Airport about the same time as my friend Leif Larson, who's going to be on stage pitching the latest stuff from Workface.com. So
that's right.
Looking forward to that. And Tanner Thompson, his marketing sidekick, is going to be showing up, taking a break from his Vail skiing vacation to meet up in Palm Springs. And we'll be there through Tuesday. Leif is actually on stage Monday morning. He got a killer time right smack in the middle of Monday morning. And so it's going to be a hoot. It's going to be a great event. I posted on it.
He gave me a heads up that he's going to have some info that we'll be able to release when we get it on the 28th.
Midnight. Everything's so, under embargo with demo. Yeah. They have a very tight embargo on the news of what people are at. They can say they're going to be there, and they're tweeting like mad about that right now, but they can't actually let out what they're introducing until 12:01 a.m. Eastern on Sunday night. So,
yep.
Yeah. Be fun. Good. And there's some other Minnesota folks there. A couple of people from W3I I found out are going to be there. John Kudron and another fellow who I don't know, former Digital River guy. You never know who else might pop up there, investors, VCs, and so forth.
Excellent.
Watch for my live blog. I'll do a cover at live blog again. And tweeting like mad. Got my fan chatter, social media aggregation widget on my blog now, which is pretty cool. Getting all the conversation that's building about demo. It's quite the social event.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Check that out. Yeah.
And then the last thing is Mini WebCon at the U of M, which is coming up on April 11th. Mm-hmm. So for those that it's always a really terrific event. I'm really impressed by how they put that together and how many people attend. So that's
good topics, good speakers. It's always good.
Yep.
Won't miss that.
Well, anything else, boys?
Looking ahead, we got some good guests.
I think that's a wrap.
But we'll be going. The nice thing is we're actually going to be doing the show on the road a couple of times coming up. Some of these events.
So. That's right.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I think we're going to be about 2 a.m. We're going to do the podcast from the Mobile Web Challenge.
Enjoy yourself.
All right.
All right, gentlemen.
That should be good.
You can do it in the oxygen room.
Although I will be there at the time, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll see.
It'll be fun. Come on, we do it after the bars close. It'll be great.
All right,
are we going to do one for Mobile March, or what day of the week is that?
I think we should. We got Mobile 3D, Mobile March to choose from. Why not?
Yeah,
we should.
We could do that.
All right.
Good.
Cool.
Sounds
all right,
great.
Gentlemen.
We'll see you guys next time on the Minivade Gang podcast.
Have a good one.
You betcha.
Take care.
You too.